I have therefore spoken to His Majesty the King to notify him that I am resigning as leader of the Conservative Party. This morning I met the chairman of the 1922 committee, Sir Graham Brady. We've agreed that there will be a leadership election to be completed within the next week.
Yes, much like her reign, her speech was short and sweet. And now the attention turns as to who should take over. Like I say, we were there. We were at number 10 Downing Street watching that resignation speech. There was a cheer of approval once she announced that she was stepping down. Now, that was partly because, along with the media, it was mostly protesters there. People protesting the Tory party. People protesting Brexit. People protesting against Remainers. People protesting against the Ayatollah. People protesting against the burning of fossil fuels. You name it, they were protesting. But to a man and woman, they were happy with Liz Truss's resignation. Certainly it appeared to us. But what of Joe and Josephine Public here on the streets of London? Well, we tipped down the road, down towards Westminster, Big Ben, you name it. And we spoke to people and we got a sense of what they were thinking, what they thought of Liz Truss's resignation.
I thought it was only a matter of time, to be honest. I didn't think she was going to last till Christmas anyway, but I didn't think she was going to go this week, if I'm honest. I think that Liz Truss got voted in on a mandate about 70,000 right-wing Tories, and I think she forgot that she's got a nation of 70 million people to try to govern, and I think she tried to serve a small minority, and that's the result of it. It's the Tories ruling for the Tories.
So you're telling me you're here from Canada.
Yes.
Liz Truss has just resigned as Prime Minister.
Yeah, I saw that. I caught a picture of it. It's a bit small.
Have you been following the news here while you've been here?
A little bit. Not a huge amount. But I mean, she had a huge majority, and she campaigned on what she did, didn't she? So yeah. It's hard to figure out. But, you know, the financial markets reacted, and she pissed a lot of people off.
And she's gone.
She couldn't survive. She U-turned on everything that she was saying to become Prime Minister. So for the new Chancellor just to rip up everything that she did, she couldn't survive. It was just a matter of when. And I didn't think that she'd last to the end of the week, and she hasn't. Rishi should come in. However, would he want to sully his name by coming into this situation? So I think really a general election, but the Tories won't want to have a general election because they won't want to give up power. But if they cared about the country as much as they said they do, then they'd go for a general election.
Where are you from?
Austria.
Oh, have you been following the news? Like, you know, Liz Truss is gone as Prime Minister.
I did not.
Are you living here?
I am just for 3 weeks now.
Okay.
Just moved here.
Okay. Have you a view on Liz Truss as Prime Minister?
I have a view on Conservatives in general.
Okay, well, what is that view?
That in general we need alternatives instead of conservating what has already been done, because as we've seen in the past, it's not been working very well.
Okay, so it's time to maybe change the status quo, upend it a bit?
Definitely, I think so. I think it's high time we do.
Do you have any sympathy for her at all?
No.
If I had to guess, I would say it will be a contest between Rishi Sunak and Boris Johnson. Boris Johnson, the whole idea is absolutely ludicrous. I'm not saying that his colleagues or the party may not favour him, but when he fell from government, he had an approval rating, a public approval rating, of minus 53. He is now facing a Commons Privileges Committee investigation and judgment, which could cause him to have to fight his seat again, which he would lose. Members of Parliament will remember what they thought about him when nearly 50 ministers resigned all at once, and I doubt they will have changed their minds. I certainly hope so.
So do you suspect, because we're still a little unsure as to how this leadership contest might take place. Let's talk about MPs whittling it down to two, and then there being an online vote of members, or maybe they will just go ahead, MPs, and elect a caretaker leader that members will then approve by postal ballot. Have you any insight into how it might work?
No insight at all. I simply noticed that they have said consultation. They haven't said there will be another nationwide hustings and vote as there was last time. I don't quite know what the word consultation means. I'm sure they don't want another big hustings across the nation. And I think some idea of yet another prime minister, a sort of caretaker prime minister, followed by a further contest to get the final prime minister, that's just too complicated. Ideally, what would happen would be that someone emerges early as the front runner amongst MPs, and the others decide to stand aside so that there is no contest at all.
And who do you suspect, or what issues do you suspect those MPs will weigh up in their minds if they are looking at Boris versus Rishi?
Well, if they're looking at Boris versus Rishi, Rishi's advantage is that he's grown up, he can add up, he correctly predicted everything that has happened under Liz Truss's economic management. And at a time of economic crisis, he looks like the safest, most adult pair of hands to take us through it. Boris, on the other hand, his great appeal, his supporters think his great appeal is that he communicates wonderfully with the public. But as I say, one mustn't forget that his approval ratings were minus 53 when he fell.
I think that when you poll Conservative voters in the middle of a bin fire crisis, they're going to hark back to anybody who hadn't accidentally set the house on fire while being in it, which is basically the metaphorical, basically what Liz Truss has done while being in number 10. And so I think very naturally they're going to hark back to almost anybody who was in their view even moderately better. Liz Truss has been a complete disaster almost from start to finish. The only thing that she did well was not throwing up on herself while she read at the Queen's funeral, and everything was downhill after that. So I don't believe that you can poll on this in an adequately neutral fashion. And I think that we need some fresh leadership. And I think that the struggles facing the country and the struggles facing my party require fresh leadership. And I very much hope that that fresh leadership is Rishi Sunak.
Unsurprisingly, other parties in Westminster have come straight out calling for a general election. Is there any way this spins out or plays out over the next few days and few weeks that ultimately brings us to that point, a general election? Or is the kind of majority that the Conservatives enjoy so robust that that's very unlikely?
I think it's very unlikely. Constitutionally, in this country, it is not a natural response within the Constitution to have a general election when there's a change in leader in the governing party. And that's because we do not elect presidents in this country. Everybody who goes to the polls votes for a local MP. The largest party formed of the most number of MPs has a leader. That leader becomes the prime minister. So as long as a leader can be supported by the majority of the MPs in his own party, according to the 1922 rules, then we do not need a general election, in my opinion. I would remind you that Gordon Brown did not go for one when he was replacing Tony Blair. We don't have the kind of system of government that requires one.
Finally, just on the Tour de France front, what is the process here? I mean, when do we find out, when do we kind of formally submit our interest, and when do we find out whether it might happen?
Yeah, so there'll be a bid development process now, which will go in probably to the middle of next year. And that will, and as I said, we'll establish a co-chaired project team, north and south. That will go through all of the technical aspects around the route, logistics, organisations and planning. So the middle of next year is the projected timeline on a formal bid submission.
All right. Well, listen, Minister, before you go, a word on the political machinations on this side of the water. We're coming to you live from London today, and Liz Truss having announced her resignation 45 days into the job.
Well, look, there's clearly worrying instability in the British government, and we've had a number of prime ministers now over the last number of years. But from an Irish perspective, they're our closest neighbour. We want to see, from a north-south perspective, peace and prosperity, and get a functioning executive. And we look forward to engaging with the new prime minister. But it's also important to re-emphasise the importance of political stability and prudent economic management. When Irish people see what's happening in the UK, as a government, we've managed to work cohesively together.
We were there at Downing Street to witness the resignation. We were speaking to people on the streets of London about Liz Truss, but we also managed to catch up with some environmental protesters, people from Extinction Rebellion and Just Stop Oil. So these are the people, you remember last week there was an awful lot of talk, they threw tomato soup, I think it was, onto a Van Gogh painting, onto Van Gogh's sunflowers, and then they glued themselves to a wall. There are other protesters as we speak glued to the floor in a Volkswagen factory. There were people just down the road from us here in London talking about gluing themselves to roads to stop traffic. This is what they do, and we spoke to them about it.
The path that we're now on with the oil and the gas and everything else, you know, we're on a path to, you know, basically ecocides, that's destruction. So as far as I'm concerned, the governments and the corporates of the world are basically trying to kill us all and will kill us all, you know, with their behaviours so they can make maximum profit at the expense of our lives and ordinary people's quality of life.
So Casey, you're here with Extinction Rebellion and Just Stop Oil. Why are you here?
As a pensioner, I'm concerned for my grandkids and the future generations, because we're killing the planet and we've got to take action now. We need to be telling the truth now, taking action now. 5 years' time, too late. 10 years' time, even more too late. Now is the time. And we need to replace the House of Lords with a People's Assembly that sets long-term policy goals, 20 years plus, instead of having this short-term yo-yo of our parliamentary crap house that we've got at the moment.
Larch is with me as well. Larch, you're with specifically Just Stop Oil, is that right?
That's right, yeah. We've got a single demand that the government stops issuing new licences for oil, coal and gas and giving new consents. We need, you know, the International Energy Agency said that has to stop last year in May 2021. Our government is proposing over 100 new licences for new fields of oil, coal and gas, and that's a criminal act. In a climate emergency, if we carry on exploiting new oil, coal and gas, we'll be locking in decades more emissions when we need to stop emissions as a matter of priority. So the very first step, when your bath is about to flood over, you don't start rearranging towels to soak up the water, you turn the bloody tap off.
I just wanted to sing and perform and get up on stage. That's all I wanted. And so that, you know, I did that since I was 16 years of age. Every other day, I was always on stage performing, whether it was TV shows over here in the UK, when we were doing all our promo to tours or whatever it was. Pretty much every other day, it was some sort of performance. And then it was gone. It was out of my life for 2 years. And that had a mental, it scarred me. It had a mental effect on me. And coming back has been very important, to be able to come back and perform again and do it. Very fulfilling for me.
Any plans for Boyzone to come back?
No, we're done. We had 25 great years. For me, it finished when Stephen died. And that probably was the end of the band as we knew it. And we probably should have walked away. We thought the right thing was to keep it going in Steele's memory, but it never felt right after that ever again. The magic was gone. The spark was gone. And I know I fought for it, tried to get it back, I couldn't get it. So yeah, for me, Boyzone ended then. So we went out on a high in 2019 with a fabulous world tour everywhere. We played venues, countries we'd never been to the first time around ever. We were all across China and, you know, Japan and everywhere, Australia, Asia, all over the place. And it was brilliant. And finishing down the road here in the Palladium for 5 nights was great. But it's done now. And I have a good relationship with the boys and I want to keep it that way. And I think if we ever were to flog it again and try and come back and do it, I think it would tarnish whatever's left in my mind anyway.
That loss, it was only 10 days ago.
Yeah, October 10th was his anniversary.
It still feels very raw to you, lads.
Yeah, well, it is very raw to us. And I think to our generation, Steele was a pioneer in the sense of he was the first boy band member to come out publicly like that, and you know, the whole nation, all of Ireland, came out with him. You know, it was quite a big deal, and you know, especially coming from a country like Ireland, you know, that we're so set in our ways, and Catholicism is so, you know, was drilled into us, and the people that we are and were brought up to be, for something like that, for the nation to share in that movement, was very, very powerful. And Steele, you know, the respect that he got was overwhelming for him, and you know, to see that in him, he was scared. And you know, he was worried about what would happen, and it was the total opposite. So I think when Steve-O passed, he was such an iconic figure in the country for that. It was the whole, the nation was grieving, and you know, we were there, you know, bloody hell at the helm, I guess, at the front of it, to you know, the four of us with Steve-O, and it was quite something. Yeah, it was amazing, yeah. The respect that he got, and it was a great honor to be part of that with him, you know, to try and give him the send off that he deserved, I guess.
You know, we often talk about the marriage equality journey. We're doing this thing on the show over the next few weeks, kind of Ireland's greatest moments, and it's one of the contenders. And there's different stepping stones in that journey. And I wonder, to a degree, as you describe it, I mean, Stephen's coming out was a cultural stepping stone on that journey, given absolutely. Who he was and who ye were at the time, wasn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. If you throw your mind back to 30 years ago on that first Late Late Show, and it's all dancing around like a bunch of idiots, to one member of that band having that impact across the country, you know, it's quite unbelievable. It's one hell of a story. It really is. And the journey that, you know, that we all took together, for the first kind of Irish pop group, and then what followed afterwards, Westlife and so on, and Niall Horan in One Direction and that. There's been an incredible, you know, and The Script and all these great pop bands that have come from the country since then. To be the first was quite something.
Yeah. So when did you move over here?
Moved over before the lockdown.
Just before?
Like the October before the lockdown. So I had the lovely winter, and then I had the lockdown. Yeah.
That lovely London winter people talk about.
Oh, it's beautiful. It's weird. Like, I was told, don't move in the summer because you'll have notions about the place that is not realistic. Move in the winter and look forward to the summer.
Mm.
So I did that. And then the lockdown happened. And Ireland at first was... I was on Twitter a lot when the lockdown was happening. I felt Ireland was very sensible, and it was very strange living in Britain and seeing Ireland be sensible about the lockdowns and about COVID. And I'm living in Boris land where everyone's just coughing into each other's mouths and saying God save the Queen, you know. I'm exaggerating, but not by much.
Hey, Lucy Fisher is with me now, Chief Political Commentator with Times Radio. Lucy, are we any clearer at this stage as to how the next Prime Minister is going to be chosen and when?
Yes, we are. We heard from Sir Graham Brady, the chairman of the 1922 committee, the powerful backbench Tory committee that presides over these processes, at 5:30 p.m., along with the party chairman, Jake Berry. They made clear that what will happen now is that nominations are open. Candidates will need to get 100 MPs backing them to make it onto the ballot. So a very high threshold, much higher than previous procedures have required of them. The ballot will, the nominations will close on Monday. If there is more than one MP that has reached 100 nominations, then MPs will have an indicative vote to decide which of the two or three candidates they prefer. That won't be binding, but it will be a sign of who can command a majority among the MPs. And if at that point the runner-up, if there is a second person who has reached 100 nominations, doesn't drop out, it will go to the membership. But I suspect there will be a lot of pressure on the runner-up, if there is one, to drop out at that stage and allow the winner of the indicative MPs vote to be crowned on Monday.
So who is the smart money on? The bookies tell me Rishi Sunak, but is it likely he would be the only candidate with 100 votes? Might Penny Mordaunt get 100? Is there any possibility, dare I say, Boris Johnson reaches that figure?
Well, I think it's not impossible, but you are right. Those are the three names that have emerged as the front runners. They're the three, certainly the two, Rishi Sunak and Penny Mordaunt, that people have been talking about in recent weeks. And because the threshold is so high, some of the other runners and riders, Ben Wallace and Brandon Lewis, the Justice Secretary, also said to be taking soundings. I think it's unlikely anyone else will try and put their name in the hat.